one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Phil series against the Giants. I know it's about, as we're recording this here on Friday morning, 36 hours in the rearview mirror. But I want to talk about some overarching things we saw during the Phillies' West Coast road trip, specifically in San Francisco. Really going to talk about some offensive issues this team is having right now. Brutal performance by the offense, especially over the last 2 days in San Francisco. But we'll talk about some other things from the weekend. Aaron Nola looked good. Some stuff about Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler's last rehab start. How soon is it before he comes back? Plus, Justin Clue spoke with Nick Pecoro, the Diamondbacks beat writer for the Arizona Republic. So we'll get a preview of this weekend series against the D-backs at Citizens Bank Park. Now, normally you don't hear me on the Friday edition of the podcast. Justin is away, but Liz Rocher and I are holding down the fort here for your end of week podcast. Liz, of course, is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, we don't normally get together at the end of the week, so I know if it feels a little funny, it's my fault.
John, I have gotten sick just in your honor. I have decided to make the Friday podcast even more difficult for you. Because I have been sick. Please enjoy the extra responsibility.
Yeah, poor Liz is bad, but she's, you know, Liz is a gamer. You know what I mean? She's
always.
Yeah. No, Liz is like the there was a baseball player like the 90s who was always like a try hard guy, like Eckstein, David Eckstein. You're like the David Eckstein.
Oh, that's
of
it.
The podcast.
All right, I'm going to do my best not to take that as an insult, but
I met
Eckstein. I remember he was like the poster boy for anti-saber for ages.
Really?
I'm pretty sure that I'm almost positive from like my early days in the Phillies, you know, Sabres circle, like around 2010.
Yeah.
I remember Eckstein was like major. He was like, everyone loved him. He was such a tryhard. And everyone's like, he is terrible. And we're like, yeah, he is terrible.
He's terrible. Yeah, he was one of those guys whose reputation did not match the actual production. But anyway, we digress. You could actually make that comment about a lot of the players on the Phillies lineup right now, players whose reputations don't match their production right now, because the Phillies lost yet another series in San Francisco, as everybody listening knows by now. 12 straight series they've lost in San Francisco, dating back to 2013. 11 series losses, one series split. It's the longest road series winless streak against any team in over 75 years for this team. The Phillies, of course, had that 6-4 comeback win on Monday. Felt like they were finally going to do it after that stirring seventh inning comeback on Monday against the Giants out in San Francisco, where they really showed a lot of heart, a lot of gumption. They then get shut out 6-0 on Tuesday, and then 5-0 on Wednesday. They enter this weekend series against the Diamondbacks riding a 20-inning scoreless streak, and the Phillies run their record to 9-29 at Oracle Park since 2014. And so, Liz, the jumping-off point here is, of course, the offense. And the way that they've gotten off to such a slow start here in 2026, over the last two games in San Francisco, they went 8-62, four hits in each game, with a 129 average, 239 on base, a 145 slugging percentage. Folks, that works out to a 384 OPS. You don't have to know a lot about baseball to know that's rock bottom. That's some real bad stuff. Rob Thompson says he just thinks everybody's trying to do too much. Let me run down some stats for you here real quick. Other than their 10 runs against the Rockies last Friday, the Phillies are averaging 2.9 runs per game in their other 11 games so far this season. They have scored seven runs. Well, they scored seven runs in the first inning against Colorado on Friday. They then scored 12 runs over their next 53 innings in the following five games. They had one extra base hit over the final two games at Oracle Park. They have scored nine runs in their last five games. And their OPS as a team through their first 12 games this year is .658. That is the lowest over the first 12 games of a season in the last 10 years. And last one for you here, Liz. With runners in scoring position, they have 100 at-bats. They are hitting 200 with runners in scoring position this season with a 637 OPS. That 200 batting average is the second worst in Major League Baseball. So, Liz, I present to you the Phillies offense. How concerned are you about this? You're muted.
Sorry. I would be concerned if we hadn't seen this before. We've seen this before and before and before and before. We've seen this a lot. We've seen this so many times. And we're always going to be concerned by it, but they will pull themselves out of it. The problem I see is that these guys just don't know how to relax. They don't know how to take off the hat, the hero hat. They don't know how to just sort of ease themselves into what's going on. I think everyone goes up to bat thinking, this is it. I'm going to end it. I'm going to end the thing and it's all going to be great. Everyone's going to start hitting. Then the next guy comes up. All right, that guy got out, but I'm going to end it. I'm going to end it. It's never, I'm going to do my best, I think. It feels like they're not going up there thinking, all right, I need to make contact. I need to get the ball on the ground. I need to give whoever it is enough time to score. I need to get the ball in the air over here. I don't know how often they come up in those big situations with a plan that is actually grounded in reality. Now, this is all hypotheticals. I have no idea. None of us have any idea what's going on in their heads, but this is just what I see from the outside and the way they all talk to the media and the way they act. Everyone feels responsibility for how this team is doing, and that's not a bad thing. But when everyone is holding themselves responsible, everyone feels the extra weight. And that's not something anybody should be carrying alone. This is a team sport, and the point of it is to rely on each other. And I think there are moments where the team knows how to do that and be like, all right, he got someone on base. The only thing I have to do is go up and do my best. I need to go up and do what I've always done. You know, it always feels like Bryce Harper, I'm going to go up and hit the longest ball out of this stadium, and then no one will ever question me again.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and that was part of my worry. I keep coming back to this. This was part of my worry about returning so many of the same players, was they are battling this monkey on their backs that, and it's going to be there until they win a World Series, and kind of everybody knows that. But it's April 10th as we're recording this. I mean, like, you can't win the World Series here in April. And, you know, this is a feeling I think you and I have both seen and share about what this team is doing and what they're going through. But it's something Rob Thompson has talked about. He talked about it after the game on Wednesday, and he pointed to one thing in particular. He looked at the 10 pull side ground ball outs in the series finale on Wednesday. And said, the players have to use the whole field. But what's happening is that when you have that many pull side ground ball outs, is that you've got everybody in this lineup who's trying to sell out and pull a home run. That's what's happening mm-hmm. with everybody in this lineup.
Exactly.
And what happens is you get 10 pull side ground ball outs. You get all singles. No ball was hit harder than 91.8 miles an hour off the bat on Wednesday. Everyone in the lineup is trying to hit the 5-run home run. But I agree with you. Like, I've seen some things, and I've got an article saying this for The Good Fight coming out on Friday afternoon, is essentially, if you are surprised by this, if this is a shock to you, if this has you overly worried about this group, more worried than you were before, you have not been paying attention at all to anything over the last four years. Like, this.
Where have you been living?
Where have you been? This is who they are. It's who they have been. I mean, the 22 playoff run is the aberration, but it's who they were throughout the 22 regular season. You know, they had a great run in the 23 playoffs, but then it kind of petered out against the team the Phillies are going to face this weekend in the Diamondbacks. And it's who they were in 24 and 25. Like, they just, that's not to say they can't buck the trend in the fall in October, because maybe they can and maybe they will. But like, this should not come as a surprise. And it should also not make any of you especially worried, because I'm here to tell you, as infuriating as this is, as annoying as this is, and as much as it looks like they don't care when it's going on, a bad offense can make a team look lethargic and uninspired. I can promise you that's not what's going on. It's the opposite, like Liz just talked about. And it's the fact that they have these three late game comebacks here this year tells you that they're involved, that they're into it, that they're enthused, like that they are trying. The problem is they're trying too hard. And that's been the case with this team forever. So I'm not trying to convince you that the Phillies offense is going to be great for October. What I will tell you is that this too shall pass. Like this is really frustrating and annoying to watch. And it might last through the first 2 months of the season until it starts getting warm again. And it's going to be really annoying and obnoxious, but it's not going to sink their chances of going to the playoffs. Like this is just in their DNA, Liz. They're going to get past it. And I'm not saying that as an optimistic guy. Like it's just a fact. We've seen it for 4 years.
Like this, and we've seen it time and time again. This team is too good to be that bad forever. That's the thing. There are really good, talented offensive players. And I think this is going to sound weird, but in the same way that when women get together for long periods of time, their cycles sync up. When I think you have a team of, this is what I'm thinking. You have a team of dudes together, a ton, especially I would guess baseball players, they tend to adopt each other's streaks. That's the only thing I can imagine here is that when they're all on, they can be on. But when a couple of them start to turn off, everyone sort of starts to turn off. And so you just have to ride it out. We've done it before. We'll do it again. It just, in the moment, it feels really terrible. It just feels unpleasant.
And here's the thing, too. Like, if you're cynical about this, I get it. I'm cynical, too. Like, I don't have any real faith that this Phillies offense is great, or you know that they're going to be great in October. Like it's a matter of fact about it. Like I'm not particularly worried about this slow start because you know they are a streaky team. They go through ups and downs. This team is no worse than the one last year or the one before or the one before that. They're going to probably be around the same kind of team this year. Now certainly there are reasons to be cynical about that. And I'm pretty cynical about the state of the lineup. They didn't do enough this offseason to improve the middle of the order. It sounds, Liz, like when the lineups are released on late Friday afternoon, we will see a different lineup. Rob Thompson, pretty early in the season, to be perfectly honest, earlier than we usually have seen him make a lineup change, has hinted that he's going to do that for this series against the Diamondbacks. And it sounds like Adolis Garcia will move up to the number 4 spot in the order, and Brandon Marsh will move up to the number 5 spot. Alec Bohm has been struggling tremendously to start the season, will likely drop down to 6, and Bryson Stott, who, again, was the popular breakout guy after a hot spring and a good second half last year, looks lost at the plate, and he will likely get dropped down to number 7. And I think this... I want to get your thoughts on that. Like, is that a good idea? I mean, I think it's a fine idea to change the lineup around. Totally for that. 100% Rob Thompson should do that. Push all of the buttons and pull all the levers that you need to do in order to try and jolt the offense. But I'm here to tell you, it's not going to change much. You know, maybe a game or two. And then the same kind of stuff will happen. Like this team just starts off slow offensively. They did it last year. Remember the first 2 months of the season we talked about? When are they going to slug? When are they going to slug? When are the Phillies going to slug? Did we forget that? It's what it is.
We're goldfish. We are essentially goldfish. Oh, we forget every year after right as soon as it's done because we have to because we're about to go through it all over again. I've always... Since my early days in really getting into baseball, which is 15, 20 years back now, I was always very dubious about lineup positions. I always thought, I understand the point of getting people on base in front of a big slugger, but I always feel like sometimes that only matters the first time through the order. Sometimes I feel like lineups are fine, but they only work if everyone's working to their level of talent. That it is expected of them, unless, you know, like the first guy always gets on and the second guy, you know, does what he's supposed to do and, you know, all that stuff. You're always going to be looking at the lineup and pushing buttons to see what's the right one. So why not just toss it all into a hat and try it? Like it is one of the only things a manager alone can do every game to actually change things. The manager can't change the players on his roster. He has to ask the GM about that. But Rob Thompson can adjust the lineup. And I think he should do that as often as possible. I mean, maybe something will work and he can stick with it. But even then, like, put anyone anywhere you want. Confuse the other team.
Yeah.
That's part of it. Like, I don't think enough managers use that. Like, who is it? The guy in Milwaukee bringing out a turtle from his pocket.
Murphy, yeah.
Like, Pat Murphy, do that in the middle of a game and see what happens. like even just little things like changing the lineup to something strange. Like, let's plop Bryce Harper in the ninth spot and see what happens. Just tell him. It's like, it's for one game. No. It's for a single game. I'm your manager and you're going to do it. Sorry.
Well, that's not going to happen because we know Rob Thompson and the players, they have a special relationship. He likes to make sure that everybody is somewhat happy. But, you know, you're not going to drop Bryce Harper down to nine for sure. But
I know. Just an example.
But clearly, the Phillies did not improve enough in their middle of the order this offseason. I mean, they're thinking, here's the thing. Maybe Adolis Garcia will be the answer. And Brandon Marsh has hit really well here to start the season. The problem with Brandon Marsh in the middle of the order is he doesn't play against left-handers. So against left-handers, you're stuck there. Like if your number five hitter, who's one of the most important bats in the lineup, can only play against right-handed pitchers, he'll play for you three quarters of the time, two thirds of the time. But against left-handers, and we've seen this in the early going, the Phillies are 0-4 in games started by left-handed starters this year. Their right-handed lineup is lost. I mean, it's just it's rough because you've got rough beginnings for Alec Bohm. This year, not a good omen for him, a guy who had a great spring and then came up north and is putting, again, he's a guy who puts all the pressure on himself to hit the 5-run home run every time that he's up. So he can't be the cleanup guy. He just can't be. And it's not fair to him to ask him to hit cleanup because he's a 6-hole hitter. He's a 7-hole hitter. Like that's where he should be in the lineup. And you can say the same thing about Bryson Stott. I kind of feel the same way about Brandon Marsh because I'm worried that he'd get a little overexposed in the number five spot in the lineup, especially if he's only playing 2/3 of the time because of all the left-handed pitching the Phillies will face. So again, we knew that this was an imperfect lineup. There's only so much moving around that you can do to really fix things. And so the other part of this, Liz, and I think it's a fair question to ask now because this is not just a 2026 thing. Again, this Phillies team has been largely the same roster, the same lineup since 2023 and even 2022 to an extent, is the hitting coach, right? It's fair to ask if another voice as the hitting coach is a lever that the Phillies should pull. And I don't have a strong opinion on it one way or the other. I don't know who you're going to get that has a better resume than Kevin Long. But I will also say sometimes a person's resume, as good as it might be, if players stop listening and hearing that voice, doesn't really matter how good the resume is. And maybe a different approach, a different way of thinking about things, a different voice when a player is struggling to put him in a different mindset. Maybe that's worth trying. It feels early for that. But again, we're not talking about 12 games. We're talking about the 162 last year and the 162 before that and the 162 before that. This is not a 2026 issue. This is a 4-year issue.
Yeah. And it does feel early to be questioning Kevin Long, and I'm very reluctant to replace him, mostly because I know the players love him, and he has done a lot of important work for the Phillies and their hitters in general. I would maybe see if we could invite a new voice in. That might cause some friction between Kevin Long and whoever it is, but you have to hope that the Phillies clearly don't want to blow things up. At this point, they can't. And I think getting rid of Kevin Long would cause a lot more consternation, just a lot more anxiety from players, a lot more frustration. They would be confused. They'd be defensive. Because things have not gotten that bad yet. Because as much as we're looking at it from the previous 62, 162 and beyond that, I don't know if the Phillies look at it that way. I have to wonder if teams look at the work of their coaches cumulatively or if they just limit it to year after year. So it'll be curious to see what happens going forward. And I do want to note, they did bring in a new voice. They've got Don Mattingly there to help with hitting. And so I would love to give that a little bit more of a chance because they'd worked with him in spring training, but that's a lot different than taking advice from someone with regular season games. So let's give it some time. And I don't think they should make any move until June. If they're going to do anything, June at least, maybe July. I mean, and even because I don't know the point. Putting another voice in there, how quickly is that going to help them? Some of them it might, but I think, again, it's just going to cause so much unpleasantness on the team because they're all so close. That's one of the things that it's another sort of consequence of keeping the same team together for so long. Everyone is very close. You know, there are a lot of self-confessed best friends on the team. And so you have to watch out because you know that Kevin Long and his family have been over to dinner at Bryce Harper's. They've probably been over to dinner at Trey Turner's. You know, these guys are friends outside of
the team.
Certainly
Kyle Schwarber's house.
Oh, my God, yes.
Schwarber's extremely close to Kevin Long. And I'll again, point to the numbers. The Phillies' 721 OPS through April last year was 11th in baseball, so not great. Their slugging percentage was 17th in baseball in the first month of the season last year, 385 slugging percentage. And they were 13th in runs scored through April of last year and 19th in home runs. Right now, they're 19th in runs scored, tied for 9th in home runs, 15th in OPS, 14th in slugging. Very similar numbers here to start the season, different in some spots. Do you know where the Phillies, Liz, take a guess, where the Phillies OPS finished as a team by the end of last season?
Eighth?
Fourth. They had the fourth highest OPS of any team in baseball by the end of last year. It was the second highest OPS after the All-Star break. So I don't say that to try and make you, and I'm not saying that to try and convince you or any of you listening to this podcast that this is a really good offense and you just got to wait it out. What I'm saying is don't be overly panicking about this. Like they're not going to make the playoffs. This is going to submarine their chances. Like this Phillies offense is broken. No, it's not broken. It's what it is. It's actually functioning exactly like it's functioned every year over the last few years. And you can take that, you can spin that in a positive way, that it's not going to be this bad, it's going to get better, and they're going to win 90 some odd games and go to the playoffs. I still firmly believe all of that is going to happen. I feel incredibly confident all of that's going to happen. I am still cynical about their ability to do it when it matters most in October. And that's not going to change. It wouldn't even change if they had the top OPS in baseball right now. So again, I'm just like level of concern about the Phillies offense for me, 0 to 10 right now. I'm at a 1. I really am. I'm at a 1 and that's not because I think they're going to be amazing and they're going to be awesome and just wait for it. All the all-stars they're going to have. I don't feel that way. I just know like they're going to hit better. They're going to get it going, especially once the weather gets a little warmer. What's your number? 0 to 10. How concerned are you?
Probably like a 2, 1 or a 2. You know, we always know they don't do well in the cold. They don't do well in the early season. It's so frustrating to have to wait it out. And we do this every year because this is what baseball is. We always get frustrated ourselves for overreacting. But like, this is the act of being a baseball fan. This is what we do every year. There's nothing that can change it. It's like the eternal dance goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's the eternal dance. No doubt. It's very true. And they played in Colorado and San Francisco in early April, not warm weather locations. And we do know that they've always struggled in San Francisco. That being said, I mean, we are not making excuses for the Phillies offense right now. It's really bad. They're getting themselves out. They are not having good at bats. They absolutely should be better. And I haven't been high on Alec Bohm or Bryson Stott coming into the season. I was not buying their springs as being as portending to having a great season here in 2026. Because again, we've seen that before too from these guys. Good springs followed by slow starts. But I mean, they'll probably pick it up at some point during the course of the year, because again, that's in their DNA. So I'm not happy with what the offense is looking like right now. It's infuriating. It's frustrating. If you're cynical, if you're upset, I get it. I just think the one emotion you shouldn't have right now is surprise. Yeah. Feel how you want. Surprise should not be among the emotions you're experiencing right now. That's all.
Exactly. Do not be surprised by this. And if you are, I congratulate you on missing the last 5 years. Thank you. I think all of us would like to tell you we missed literally any chunk of the last 10 to 15 years. We all wish that for ourselves. So yeah. Thank you. Congratulations.
There are certain spots we wish were blotted out from the brain.
Oh my God.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah. Couple other quick notes from the weekend. I will say Aaron Nola looked really good. I know he gave up that 3-run home run to Rafael Devers in the sixth inning, but when you know your offense is not going to help you, it's really difficult to pitch. And Aaron Nola is someone who an opposing hitter never misses a Nola mistake pitch over the middle. He is walking the tightrope every single outing that he has. And, you know, he pitched great in that game, wriggled out of some trouble, in a couple different spots. Only 3 strikeouts on the game, but I thought was locating his stuff really well. The fastball was really good. It was nothing heading into the sixth, and he gave up a bloop double that, I mean, the hitter couldn't have thrown the ball into right center field with any better accuracy to fall in between 3 fielders, and it turned into a double. You know, then the walk after that is what hurts you there. But then you strike out Matt Chapman on the ABS challenge, from Rafael Marchand when he thought he had a walk to load the bases, which was a really fun moment. And then the next pitch, that momentum lasted 5 seconds, and Devers crushed a middle fastball right down the middle over the center field wall. And that was it. You knew they weren't scoring. And that was the end of that game. But even in the loss, I still thought Aaron Nola pitched really well. And I thought the bullpen pitched really well this weekend, Liz. I thought, let me ask you this real quick before we get to the bullpen. A Rob Thompson decision I want to run by you. Ahead of Rafael Devers, who is a left-hander, Thompson had Tanner Banks ready in the bullpen. It was 5 1/3 innings for Nola at that point. He could have gone lefty on lefty and brought in Tanner Banks versus Rafael Devers, but he decided to leave Nola in the game, even though it's righty lefty, because Nola has had success against Devers. Devers was 2-for-13 in his career against Nola heading into that spot. Did Rob Thompson make the right decision? I mean, was the process, do you understand the process there? Because obviously what we saw happening, if he could go back and do it again, Rob Thompson would put in Tanner Banks.
Probably, yeah. Or you have to ask. I mean, in retrospect, yeah. But I don't know if he would have changed his decision, because 2-for-13 is, those feel like pretty safe numbers. Those are the numbers that you, when you see something like that, you're like, oh, I'll definitely keep this guy in. He's had success. You can't, after a guy's gotten 2 out of 13 hits off you, you're not assuming he's going to crush a massive home run.
Right.
You know, just for his third of 14 hits. You're just not. And that's how baseball goes, you know? Aaron Nola got bitten and it ended the game. But, you know, that's baseball. You make one decision and something else happens. Devers had a really good eye. You know, Nola threw a really easily hittable pitch, which happens occasionally. Yeah.
Yeah. And Devers was looking for that pitch and just ambushed it. And credit to him. The Phillies have had opportunities. That's what frustrates me with the Phillies offense is, you know, when they get an opportunity like that first ball, fastball, they're not crushing it, you know, and that's when this offense is going well, they're doing that well. And that's, you know, credit to Rafael Devers. He managed to do that. The Giants came into that series playing the worst baseball in the league, and they finish outscoring the Phillies 11-0 over the final 2 games. It was really dispiriting. A couple other quick things here, Liz. Christopher Sanchez has not been quite as sharp in his last 2 starts as he was on opening day. And one of the things that Kyle Fisher on Twitter noted, at Kyle Fisher 45, Sanchez's sinker velocity is down to start the season. It was 95.8 miles an hour last year. It's 94.4 right now. Exit velocity off that pitch, hitters were hitting that 89.8 miles an hour off the bat last year. It's 94.7 this year. And the barrel rate has increased. It was 13.3% a year ago, 21.9% here so far. So this pitch from Christopher Sanchez, his sinker, he's not been able to locate it. He's not throwing it as hard as he was last year. And in his last two starts, just his command hasn't been what you would want it to be. Is it the kind of the same thing for him, do you think? Cold weather, just kind of getting started in the season. How concerned should we be, or are you, about the velocity right now with Christopher Sanchez?
Well, I'm definitely not at a two. I'm a little higher than that. I would love to hope that it's just the cold and getting started, and we'll just have to wait and see. Like, I don't know what else you can do, because if he's not hurt, he just has to ramp up. He knows where his velocity has to be. And if he, after, you know, the end of this month, if he's not getting there, then that's a question that needs to be answered. Like, what is the deal? Is your arm not strong enough? Is your shoulder not strong enough? What are we missing?
Right. Some other quick notes. Ugly defense over the weekend in San Francisco. Justin Crawford, who's played well in center, but he misplayed a fly ball in deep center field on Tuesday. Garcia picked him up by throwing out a runner at home a couple of batters later, so that was pretty fun. Trey Turner had a rough weekend, botched a double play ball in the fifth inning on Tuesday, committed another error in the eighth that led to two unearned runs by Orion Kerkering in his first game back. Otto Kemp continues to have a really hard time as he struggles to learn the field. Misplayed a ball. It was hard hit, but went over his head for a two-run double that made it 3-0 on Tuesday. He has misplayed three fly balls in left field this year.
Question. I guess I kind of want
to... What's that?
I'm sorry, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Better left fielder, him or Rhys Hoskins?
Think him, because Rhys, I haven't seen anybody work than Rhys, but it's kind of close right now.
It's been many years since I've watched Rhys, and so I'm a little biased.
It's fuzzy. It's fuzzy exactly how bad Rhys was in 2018 and 2019. It was just 1 year. I think it was 2018 they tried him with that, or 19.
They didn't have room for him yet.
It was Harper's first season, right? They got Bryce Harper. Maybe it was Carlos Santana was here. That's what it was. It was Carlos Santana was picked. They got Carlos Santana in 2018, and they sent Rhys Hoskins out to left field. That's what that was. That's right. Yeah, that was brutal. A lot of focus on Otto Kemp right now. And, you know, it's important to be patient with a guy who's been a second baseman and third baseman to try and learn left field. But that being said, and the Phillies seem to have some options in AAA, Brian De La Cruz and Felix Reyes are both outfielders. Reyes is learning the position just like Kemp is. So they probably wouldn't pull the trigger on him, although he's got insane power and is off to a red hot start against left-handers in Lehigh Valley. Brian De La Cruz is also playing really well in Lehigh Valley, and he is a good left fielder. He could make that swap right now, Otto Kemp for Brian De La Cruz, and that's probably what I would do. I would call up Brian De La Cruz. I would make Otto Kemp your utility infielder, and I would say goodbye to Dylan Moore. I would release Dylan Moore and get him, you know, move him off. Keep Otto Kemp on the big league roster, but make him an infielder. And I would bring Brian De La Cruz up as the right-handed side of the platoon with Brandon Marsh, because my thing with Otto Kemp was they sold him to us this year as an answer for the outfield, right? They didn't do it. Well, Otto Kemp, you know, don't forget, you know, we've got Trey Turner, we've got Kyle Schwarber, we've got Bryce Harper. And don't forget, we've got Otto Kemp too. Like, that was how they framed him to us this offseason. Yeah. Like, we didn't need to do a whole lot this offseason because you know who we have? We've got Otto Kemp. I never bought it. Neither did you.
No,
neither did Justin.
I don't think. No, none of us bought it.
None of us bought it. But it placed unfair expectations on him. He's not that guy. And he's really struggling at the plate. 0-for-4 with two strikeouts on Tuesday. 0-91 on the season so far. 1-for-11 with six strikeouts. So I feel bad for Otto Kemp. Like, he's just kind of been put in a position where he can't succeed.
I feel bad for him too. This is obviously not how anyone, or at least how he definitely wanted this to go down. It is unfair to put him out there in the major league field when he's to learn a position. The Phillies love doing this. This is not the first time. This is at least like the third, fourth time in our memories during the podcast when it's been going. Like, they love doing this, and it's really dumb, and it rarely works out. The only reason they did it with Rhys is because they didn't have anywhere for him to play and they needed his bat. And this is not a case where they need his bat. He doesn't have one right now. If he's got options left, honestly, and they still want him to learn left field, like that's the thing. They have to decide how important it is for him to learn left field. Do you want his bat or do you want him to be a good outfielder? I don't know if at this moment you can have both because he has to pick one to focus on. That was an issue with Hoskins as well and with Kingery. Like, all of these guys have had trouble because they have to put their hitting on the back burner to learn the position that they're at, because not only do they want to do well, they don't want to embarrass themselves. Like, I would say if Kemp has options, send him back down. If they want him to learn left field, send him down there so he can do it and get De La Cruz up here immediately. Because I think they'll give him the weekend. That's my thought. They're going to give him the weekend or else they would have made a change already. But if they don't make a change on Monday, I'm really suspicious as to what they're doing and what they're seeing from Kemp and what exactly the words they're saying to themselves to trick themselves into doing this.
Well, he's not likely to start this weekend. The Diamondbacks are going to throw three right-handers at them. Mike Soroka is going to take the mound for them on Friday night. They've got Brandon Bott taking the mound on Saturday, and then Zach Gallen will be the starter on Sunday. So likely we will see Brandon Marsh starting in left field each of the three games this weekend against the Diamondbacks. But your point is taken. I think, you know, keep him around. You can try it a little bit longer. But I'm not waiting a whole lot longer to pull the trigger on making that switch in the outfield and getting Brian De La Cruz. It's not the reason that the Phillies are struggling, but I think I am more annoyed with all of the offseason pumping up of Otto Kemp than anything else, than his actual performance. Just like they thought you're going to get away with that. And like, it's just stop it. Come on. You know, don't. No, it's stupid. We get
it. Let's not do that.
And this team needs to be better against left-handers. Right now, it's a major problem for them playing against left-handed starters. The right-handers who are in the lineup, Realmuto, Bohm, Garcia, have not gotten off to a good start against left-handed starters. And Kyle Schwarber, who was their best hitter against left-handed pitching last year, is off to a very slow start against them. Again, very early. They're struggling against everybody, lefty, righty. Doesn't really matter at this point. Last thing, Liz, for you, before we get to our conversation with Nick Pecoro, the Diamondbacks beat writer for the Arizona Republic, to preview this weekend's series against the Diamondbacks. Zach Wheeler made another rehab start on Wednesday for AAA. It went better than the last one. Iron Pigs broadcaster Sam Jelinek reported that Wheeler topped out at 94.3 miles an hour, but only averaged 92.9 miles an hour on his fastball. Still way down for him, but he went 4 1/3, gave up one run on three hits with one walk and six strikeouts. After the game, Wheeler said there were still things he's working on and that, you know, he was happy to have another start down in Lehigh Valley. When we talked last time, I think you were of the opinion that after this next start, if, you know, that you would be up for Wheeler joining the big league roster. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that's what's going to happen, I think. And so, I mean, if it's another good outing, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, his fastball's down, but it's cold everywhere. And we're just going to keep saying that until it's no longer true. And you just have to, it's what I said. You have to hope that the adrenaline and the excitement of being back up in the majors will help. And that, you know, just being back in his regular groove will help him work out the last bits. I mean, you have to ask, how much worse could it be than what we've got already?
Yeah, we just don't want to see Zach get knocked around on a big league mound, but I agree with you. You're right. And I think he's smart enough to know when he's ready. So if Zach says he's ready, I think you just trust that and see where it takes you. So, all in all, Liz, kind of a rough West Coaster, but they did go 3-3 on a West Coast trip. That's oftentimes what you're looking to just split a West Coast trip and get back at even. One other little fun note. Did you know that through Thursday's games, 12 of the 15 teams in the National League are 500 or better? There's only three teams under 500 right now in the National League. A lot of parity right now. Can you name me the three teams that are under 500 in the National League?
I literally just closed my standings window, so let's see if I could do it.
Yeah, try to guess.
Because I didn't even look at it that hard. You see, the Nationals, I think, are under 500.
The Nationals are one, correct?
My guess would be the Pirates, maybe.
Nope. The Pirates are over 500. I'll give you a hint. We just finished playing both of them.
Oh my God, the Giants. I forgot they were off to like the worst start in history.
And the team we played before that?
The Rockies.
So yeah, the Phillies' last three opponents, the Nationals, the Rockies, and the Giants, are the only teams in baseball, in the National League, that are under 500 right now in the NL. So the Phillies have had a pretty good schedule here to start the season and haven't really taken advantage of it. But at 6-6, still a long way to go. And of course, you know, they have traditionally played well against good teams, too. So be looking forward to this team getting back home here for a three-game series against the Diamondbacks here at Citizens Bank.
Well, this weekend, the Phillies return to Citizens Bank Park and take on the Arizona Diamondbacks. The team baseball prospectus called the league's least average team heading into 2026. Arizona is counting on some breakouts to happen this year that projections don't have a lot of faith in, but numbers only have the power you give them. Nobody likes playing in the same division as the Dodgers, but this year Arizona is betting on star power and right fielder Corbin Carroll, shortstop Ketel Marte, some upside from younger players like Alec Thomas and Gabriel Moreno, and a couple of vets like Carlos Santana and Nolan Arenado. Maybe that and the right deadline moves will get you a seat in October. But today, the Snakes slither back into Citizens Bank Park for a weekend series when we all get to relive our fondest memories of the Phillies' 2023 postseason splat. Joining me to talk about the D-backs is Nick Pecoro, Diamondbacks beat writer for the Arizona Republic. Nick, thanks for joining us on Hitting Season.
Yeah, no problem, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
So the Diamondbacks are going to be without Carlos Santana, who is the oldest position player in the league at 39. Everyone was thrilled to learn. Santana will miss more than 10 days, though currently he is on the 10-day injured list with a right adductor strain. It's a shame for Arizona, who's going to be without Santana, who against Philly specifically hits 319 with a career 992 OPS against them. So with injuries to him, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., A.J. Puck, Merrill Kelly as well. How defanged is the Diamondbacks lineup without Santana as well as infielder Jordan Lawler, who just broke his wrist, as options?
it's not at full strength, that's for sure. And I don't think that it's the same lineup that they were running out there last year that had Eugenio Suarez and Josh Naylor on the corners on the infield. They kind of intentionally took a little bit of a step back offensively, hoping to get better defense and sort of aid their pitching staff a little bit more. They're without Pavin Smith as well. I don't remember if you mentioned him. Gurriel and Lawler, those are probably the three biggest losses. Santana, you know, hasn't hit, at least didn't in the first, you know, 8 or 9 games that he played. And was kind of in danger of losing some at bats anyway. He was released last year by the Cleveland Guardians, I think in August. And as you mentioned, I think he actually just turned 40. I think there's questions about how much longer would hold on to him anyway if he continued to struggle. The offense has been an issue early on for the Diamondbacks. I think they just kind of expected a lot of those guys that you mentioned, the stars to be carrying them offensively. And outside of Corbin Carroll, they haven't really all gotten off to great starts. So it's been a little bit of a slog offensively so far.
Yeah, we'll get to Carroll in a minute here because, yeah, he has been something fun to watch. But the Diamondbacks lost a game to the Mets this past Tuesday, 4-3 in New York. And after the loss, manager Torey Lovullo said, "We just didn't execute at a high level at very critical times, and that cost us the game." So the Phillies have a similar problem to the one Lovullo is describing here a little broadly. But the Phillies' problems have been a little more visible when they fail to perform at that level. They're kind of messy and dramatic. Their owner's currently in a feud with the family of a beloved broadcaster. They get scared and confused when the bases are loaded. So what is the thing that you would say holds the Diamondbacks back from executing on that higher level that they couldn't reach on Tuesday?
I don't know. I guess it's just... kind of like I was saying before, I think it's like, you know, when Ketel Marte and Geraldo Perdomo and Gabby Moreno and Corbin Carroll all get going, then that's a tough lineup. I think they showed that last year in August and September, even after trading Suarez and Naylor, you know, that they're going to be able to score runs when it's really just those four guys. And then kind of, you know, some contributions scattered throughout from the other guys, you know, guys moving runners and, you know, doing things like that to, you know, play productive offensive baseball. But I just don't think that right now they're really firing on all cylinders. You know, and we'll see. They have Nolan Arenado on their team now. He's their third baseman. He's been, I guess it's been a little bit hit or miss defensively. He's made some great plays. He's made some mistakes. But he hasn't really gotten going yet offensively. He got a couple hits maybe yesterday. But still, you know, hasn't been hitting the ball hard with much consistency. And he's coming off a really, you know, down year with the St. Louis Cardinals. So I think there's lots of questions about what he's going to be able to bring offensively. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, you saw some of these struggles in their hitting with runners in scoring position. Again, against the Mets in their last series, their at one point team batting average with runners in scoring position dropped down to .235. Which was still better than the Phillies, by the way, but it definitely is an issue for them. And, you know, having two teams like this face each other feels like, you know, one of them's going to be able to kick it into high gear here or use the other's shortcomings to kind of like get back in an offensive groove. Which of these teams do you think blinks for? Are the Diamondbacks primed to for a breakout at this point? Like we're talking about the struggles they've had to start the year. The Phillies have kind of like been a little touch and go. Sometimes they look like they're snapping out of it. And then the next day they get shut out. The Diamondbacks, you know, do you feel like they're primed to start finding their groove offensively against the Phillies?
I guess you can make that argument. I don't think that the Diamondbacks are going to see Sanchez in that series. I think it's what, like Walker, Painter, Lizardo. So
yes,
I think it's possible. But you know, I think that the Phillies lineup is on paper probably a good bit better than the Diamondbacks right now. I know a lot of guys haven't gotten going there either. I think there's a level of depth to their lineup that the Diamondbacks lineup currently doesn't have, at least not without Gurriel and Pavin Smith and Lawler playing some kind of roles in it. Just when you've got guys like you know, Tim Tawa and Ildemaro Vargas, you know, getting at bats down near the bottom. Jorge Barroza, another guy that, I mean, these aren't exactly proven offensive contributors. You know, Tawa and Barroza have some upside. They haven't shown it yet. It's just hard to bank on that lineup being productive at the moment.
Well, speaking of productivity, we mentioned Corbin Carroll, and of any player on the team, the one whose success feels most critical for Arizona has got to be Corbin Carroll. In his first 10 games of the season, Diamondbacks went 5-5, but in the five losses, Carroll had two hits, and in the five wins, he had eight. So when he's going, you could say the Diamondbacks are going. And this is all after he's recovered from a broken hammock bone over the spring. So my question is, how can the Phillies most effectively stop Corbin Carroll, if that's even possible?
Probably spam him with lefties, I guess, would be the best way to try to approach that. He's looking pretty good, and I'm sure his hand after the hamate surgery is not feeling great still. And yet he's out there continuing to be a force at the plate. It's been impressive to watch. You know, he kind of showed it a little bit last year when he came back early from a broken bone in his hand and or maybe his wrist. I forget what it was. But he was playing through a good bit of pain and discomfort then. And he's certainly doing a little bit of that now. I think it's getting better every day, it seems like. But I'm sure it doesn't feel 100%, and it hasn't stopped him.
Well, just to touch on pitching here as well, the Diamondbacks lost Corbin Burns until after the All-Star break. They're relying on 37-year-old Merrill Kelly. Bounce back strong, front of the rotation starter Zach Gallen as well is looking to do a little better than his free agency fall start in 2025. And then there's a trio of back end starters in Brandon Pfaadt, Ryan Nelson and Eduardo Rodriguez. The bullpen recently fended off allegations that Paul Sewald was off to a rough start as he rebounded. Which arm should pose the Phillies hitters the biggest challenge this weekend, from the rotation or the bullpen?
I'm sorry, say that again. What's the biggest challenge for the Phillies, the rotation or the bullpen?
Yeah, which arm from either the Diamondbacks rotation or bullpen will pose Phillies hitters the biggest challenge this weekend?
Ah, okay. Let me see here. I forget who's scheduled to be starting in this series. Do you remember who's pitching for the Diamondbacks?
We're talking before the probable pitchers were announced. Won't be Gallen.
I've got this. Soroka, Thott, and Gallen, I think, are the three. Soroka and Gallen have both gotten off to pretty good starts so far. Soroka had a pretty impressive series. Debut with the Diamondbacks. He went five innings, struck out 10. It's more swing and miss than I think realized when the Diamondbacks signed him. Back in the day when he was a young pitcher coming up with the Braves, it was a lot of like, I don't know for sure if it was, you know, strictly sinker slider, but it was a lot of sinkers. And it just felt like he was a guy that was, you know, trying to get ground balls and did a pretty good job of it. But now I see him and it's a lot of, I mean, it's a really deep repertoire. It's six pitches. It's at least five pitches. And it's, you know, high fastballs. It's, you know, sometimes 96 miles an hour. It's just a completely different guy than he used to be. And it's honestly, when it's going good, it's pretty impressive. You know, he needs to throw more strikes probably, but I guess that's the name that kind of stands out to me there. In the bullpen, Sewald's had some ups and downs. He's been able to get more swing and miss than maybe I expected so far this season. It's been sort of impressive. Jonathan Loaisiga, you may remember that name. He was a longtime Yankees pitcher. Is pitching high leverage innings for them and featuring pretty good stuff. He's got nicked up a little bit the last couple times. I think he's blown leads both times, but it's been like single, sac fly. That's what it was the other day. You know, it's not like he's getting destroyed. But that's another arm that I would say is one to keep an eye on.
So ultimately, it's still early in the season. Results are still being accrued and conclusions are obviously not being drawn, not by the more rational viewers, at least. So at this point in the season, we're looking more towards, you know, what later on in the year, what's the Diamondbacks like end goal here? Like, as far as this season goes, they've got to compete in the division with the Dodgers. So that's obviously a huge hurdle for them. But like, what do the Diamondbacks view as a realistically best case scenario for how this season goes?
Yeah. I would say, given the number of guys that are hurt, you know, we talked about the guys on the position player side, Gurriel, Pavin Smith, Jordan Lawler at the moment. But we didn't really talk about the guys on the pitching side. They're hoping to get Corbin Burnes back at some point in July. Before that, they're hoping to get AJ Puck, one of their top relievers. And then after Burnes would be Justin Martinez, another of their top relievers. You know, I think that they're hoping that they can hang in there. Just sort of, you know, be on the periphery of the wild card race, start filling these guys, you know, back into the lineup. And then if possible, go add at the trade deadline to, you know, fill whatever holes that remain. You know, and so far, you know, they're 5-6 through 11 games. It's obviously not great, but I think that given, you know, how many big names they're missing, if they play this, and I should mention they've had a very tough schedule to open and have a tough schedule through the next probably 3-4 weeks. It's kind of brutal. If they can get through, you know, the first few months of the season hanging around 500, I think that's probably a success. And, you know, start adding some guys back in and start adding some trade acquisitions back in if they're in position to do that at the deadline. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what you're looking at. More realistically, next year, you know, when these pitchers are going to be fully healthy and you get a full season of Corbin Burnes, a full season of Justin Martinez, you know, that's when it kind of makes a little bit more sense to think more optimistically about what the team could be. But I think if they hang in there this year, that would be accomplishing their goals.
Yeah, I think they've got a lot of similarities. They might have a lower ceiling potentially than the Phillies, but I think they both have rosters where they're looking to get questions answered. The Diamondbacks are probably dealing with more issues that they didn't plan to have to deal with in regards to like the injuries and everything. But the Phillies, they wound up, you know, after the Bo Bichette thing fell apart in the winter, they wound up having to pivot to more like, yeah, let's see if this young guy's ready for the prime time. Let's see if this bounce back candidate will work. So they're trying to figure some things out here in the beginning of the season, same as the Diamondbacks. And that puts you in an interesting position at times. Well, the Phillies will get their first crack at the D-backs in 2026 on Friday at the bank, assuming John Middleton hasn't scrapped the place and sold it for parts yet. First pitch is Friday at 6:40. We've been talking with Diamondbacks beat writer for the Arizona Republic, Nick Pecoro. Nick, thanks for joining us on Hittin' Season.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, everyone, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Want to remind you all to make sure you tell your friends and family members about the Hittin' Season podcast. We're on Apple, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you don't actively listen to us on Spotify, you listen to us on one of the other platforms, if you wouldn't mind going to Spotify and just following the show there, that will help us move up the Spotify rankings so more fans can find us when they do a search for Phillies podcasts on that platform. So it would take 2 seconds of your time. And if you've done it already, thank you so much. If you haven't, and you wouldn't mind doing that for us, if you're a fan of the show, we would greatly appreciate it. Also, don't be shy to send us an email to hittinseason@billypenn.com. And of course, you can catch all of the roundtable shows that we do. We will record another one after the series finale against the Diamondbacks this weekend. And you can catch all of our roundtable episodes of the podcast over at the WHYY YouTube channel. Just subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel and you can find our podcast there. Thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.